This chapter is the last chapter in the primarily historical section of Daniel. The great value of the Book of Daniel was for the exiles. It was to support the exiles, it was to protect the exiles. Daniel, by his example, helped them to maintain and make progress in their spiritual life, and by the influence that he was enabled to have under the guidance of God and through the laws enacted by Nebuchadnezzar and by Darius and later by Cyrus, they were able to flourish throughout the kingdom. Now, we know that historically, you can think of it under communism, the further you are from the seat of government, the more petty dictators can wreak their havoc upon those who are refuseniks. And the purpose of the legislation which Nebuchadnezzar and Darius promulgated was so that there might be protection throughout the land, particularly for the Jews in their worship. There are many things that are of great, great use to us now. The whole thing about the putting down of pride and of trusting absolutely in the Lord in extreme situations. So many of these things are of help to us. But in its own day, the example of Daniel, even quoted by the prophet Ezekiel, who was contemporary, was made clear to them that they should keep their faith going, that they should not mix with the other nations, that they should maintain their faith in purity and their worship and the protection that was afforded them by the state was earned, if you like, through the work of the three young men and through the work of Daniel. So as we turn to this particular chapter, we find that Darius the Median, the Mede, has conquered. Now, I imagine maybe he had heard about the reputation of Daniel. After all, Nebuchadnezzar, the greatest king of all, had promulgated throughout his realm all the various things that were done and the laws, and had appointed Daniel. His name, his reputation was known, and it was these lands that had been conquered by the Median. So in a sense, he just took over what was there. However, the princes or satraps that he appointed were not Babylonians, because they would be suspected of, once they got out of the king's reach, of perhaps turning against him. So these would be men that he brought with him, Medes and possibly Persians. So we read that it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes. Esther 1 tells us that in later days there were 127 provinces. Now, if it is true that a prince for a province, then there were 7 more additional ones created. Maybe the areas were changed, like we change boundaries sometimes. Maybe it represented extensions of the kingdom. But we have here 120 princes that should be over the whole kingdom. Just to do 2 things, really. To make sure that law and order was kept, and to make sure, therefore, that the king's interests and financial interests also would take no damage. And secondly, he gave 3 presidents to keep an eye on these princes, that they should report to him, as we would say in these days, as line manager. So there were the 3 of them, and these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was the first. Now, it isn't difficult, I think, for you, if you've ever had anything to do with hierarchy, whether it's in administration or whether it's in the seat of government, to know that there is a great respect, even awe, for those who are in the higher echelons of power. And I think you should think of Daniel being held in awe. His reputation and his familiarity with Nebuchadnezzar and the things that Nebuchadnezzar did under his guidance, all under the Lord's guidance, would be known. And while you would think that to have been praised by Belshazzar on the day of his demise would be a drawback, it clearly, when Darius arrived, or his general arrived with the soldiers, even if Daniel wasn't still there, but had gone back to his house within the walls, clearly Daniel was singled out. And one imagines from the way that this chapter reads, but one doesn't really imagine it, that there was a bond between Darius. He recognized that this man was exceptional. Not only did he recognize that this man was exceptional, but there was an immediate relationship between the two of them. They say that you're two great world leaders, like each other and get on well together and feel the same way about many things, that it bodes well for the world. And I think when these two got on so well, as clearly they did, it boded well for the Jews in particular and for the land as a whole. If a Christian is raised to a post of eminence, then he is in a position to do an enormous amount of good. You think of the former Speaker of the House of Commons, the Welshman, whose name I just forget for a minute, and what good, and he was a Labour MP before he became Speaker. He was able to do such a lot of good in high places. And it gave encouragement, you see, because the area he represented so ably, and as a Christian as well as the Speaker, there were many, many Christians in the valleys of Wales, but you see, they took encouragement that such a man did not poo-poo the faith, which many others of intellect did. One man standing like that makes an enormous, enormous difference in the help and the general encouragement it gives. All this, of course, under the guidance of the Lord. So a Christian, if he is brought into that situation, or even a situation of relative importance, of leadership in any capacity, may, by his steadfastness and his firmness and his being set apart, do an enormous amount of good. Now, it's what I've not said that counts. If we think to be like everybody else, then we don't make an impact. If we want to be like the rest, and all teenagers go through that stage, but if we want to be like the rest, if we don't want there to be a clear distinction, then, of course, we will just be like the rest, and they'll take no notice of us in terms of our faith. So here we have, if you like, something of a template for how to be a leader in this world and yet not be of the world, as distinct from just being a believer in the world and not being of the world. This Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king sought to set him over the whole realm. Now, Darius recognized that in this man was an excellent spirit. Gill makes a great deal of point of saying this is not the Holy Spirit referred to here. This is his administrative skill. This is his honesty. This is his carefulness. This is all the things that make him to be superb at the job of governing or of administrating the government. I don't see a problem. I would have felt that clearly that is what he would recognise. But what he was recognising was the Holy Spirit giving to Daniel that great gift. For all the gifts we have come from the Lord. And here arose the trouble, teacher's pet syndrome. And the king sought to set him over the whole realm to be his vice regent, to represent him everywhere. And even that was different from being top of the three. The three might be said, we don't know whether the three each covered a big area, or whether the three met together in the central place and all the others reported to them there, or whether they went out on a circuit. We don't know how it operated. But clearly what was in the mind of Darius was to raise Daniel still higher and send him out with a roving commission to be his deputy, his vice regent. He sought to do that. And it's this that arouses the envy, you see. The king sought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. Well, then the presidents and princes, well, there were three, now there are two. Because clearly Daniel wouldn't be doing that. So it's two presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. Now, one of the things that we in our lifestyle in Western Europe have is that we do not have this idea, most people don't understand this idea of identification or representation or anything like that. Later on, we're going to see that terrible rule by which, when they came to be punished, the presidents who were found guilty and the princes who were found guilty, not only were they cast into the den of lions, but their family and their children. And although it was an iniquitous law that we would see totally unfair, if you can understand that it arises over identification, a husband and wife are one. A husband and wife and their children are one. What the man of the house does, he takes his family with him. Whether they're personally agree or not is another matter. But that's how it originates, you see. This whole idea of identification, of being one. And so here too, I don't know how many of the princes were involved in all this, but clearly I don't think all of them were, despite what is said. But they would represent whether they agreed or not with this whole thing. So Daniel is quite happy to say, then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they couldn't. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. And here is the argument, you see, that the previous verse, or earlier in the verse, the excellent spirit that was in him, they're not talking about the Holy Spirit. If they were talking about the Holy Spirit, you couldn't say that there was no error or fault in him. We all are sinful. But he's talking about the discharge of his duty. That there was no error or fault found in the discharge of his duty by the Spirit. He was faithful to his work. Now, we see it, of course, from the king's side in a minute that he was a captive Jew, but from Daniel's side, here was a man for whom it would have been very easy to have been an opponent. I think you have here the example, contrary to everything that is of being a zealot, you see? He, like Joseph before him, rose to the top under the kings who made him captive. And he does not, we shall see in this chapter, exercise civil disobedience. Well, he does, but only not on the streets, but only by doing what he'd always done. No deliberate act of civil disobedience. So these men are able to say, we shan't find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Which of course means that they're admitting that their complaint is against God and not against man. So the presidents and princes. Now, I was saying that Daniel should hold Daniel in awe. When you think of the devious manner of what is now about to happen, you realize how much higher Daniel was in his integrity over and above all these men. He had the measure of them all, they did not have the measure of him. And therefore, but these are cunning men. These are men who know how to work to their own advantage, local politics, national politics, twist the king around their little finger. They know how to do all these things, but Daniel, they couldn't do it. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king. And they said to him, all the presidents of the kingdom, the governors, the princes, the counselors, and the captains. Now, will you notice as we go along how everything that is in their favor they exaggerate, and how everything that is contrary to them they make light of? Now, that is always the technique, of course, of subtlety. All the presidents, I'm sure that they weren't all in bulk, because not all got put to the den of lions, you see. Well, there were just two presidents left. It wasn't all the presidents, even in that sense. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors, the princes, the counselors, the captains, all the others have been brought into this, have consulted together to establish a royal statute. Really? Now, you can see why this is the monarchy of silver and not gold. Can you imagine folks going to Nebuchadnezzar and say, we've decided to establish a royal statute? Really? And in fact, what you see here is the initial condemnation of democracy, where the tail wags the dog. But we have decided to establish, or we've consulted together to establish a royal statute way beyond their remit. Any king in his right mind would have told them where to go. It may have been through weakness that Darius didn't do that, or fear. I feel it is much more likely that he was actually rather like Ahithophel, blinded by the Lord, and turned what would have been his wisdom into folly, in order to magnify Daniel and to preserve his people. And it's a ridiculous thing, isn't it? Who ever heard of this sort of thing? Never happened again, I don't think. Not quite like this. To make a firm decree, see the accent, that it's firm, that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god, remember there were lots of gods that were worshipped throughout the kingdom, or man. So a child can't say, Dad, I'd like something. See? This is ridiculous. But they go to these lengths because they're after Daniel. This is how subterfuge works. They're not interested in any of the other gods. They're not even interested in Darius. They're not really interested in the affairs of the kingdom. They just want Daniel. If they had said that if anyone prayed to Jehovah, and that would have taken him thousands, if they said that, then alarm bells would have rung in Darius's mind. But you see, they covered it all over. They covered who their target was. And this is the way of substitute always. Whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. The difficulty in thinking that the reason the king gave in was that he really rather liked the idea of being worshipped is that he didn't know it, unless he got wind of it before, until that point. He let him go on to that extent after saying, we've decided to establish a royal statute. It looks as if they now came out with their scroll, they'd written it all up. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing. Here it is. They've got him around their own little finger. That it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Strictly correct. The order, if you were to read Esther chapter 1, you'll see in the days of Cyrus and subsequent kings of the Persians, Esther reads Persians and Medes. We use the expression in English, the law of the Medes and Persians. Actually, Esther comes earlier in the Bible, but the event is later as the Persians and Medes, Esther 1. Well, now, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Now, clearly, I don't think they invented that law, but it is a flawed law. You can understand how a monarch would think that if he ever went back on his word, he would be ridiculed, and it would show want of power. But inasmuch as nobody is faultless, a king who realised that he'd made an error, it would have been a strength to be able to revoke your rule. It was not a strength that the Medes and Persians had a rule that could not be revoked once it's made. And it played into the hands of subterfuge, of course. Well, wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, when Daniel heard that the writing was signed, one imagines therefore that he was not present and was not in a position to argue against it before. Or maybe he didn't know what was going on and just chose to ignore it. He went into his house, and his windows being open in the chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. In other words, he didn't lodge a petition. Much as I admire the work of Christian Institute and also Christian Watch, I'm not fully convinced that it is the proper approach. Yeah, we fight for our rights, I suppose, and that's what we think, but I'm not sure that it's the scriptural approach in many instances anyway. There may be times when it is right to fight, but he did not. He prayed. He didn't come out and object. He could have gone to the king, couldn't he? He's allowed to make a petition to the king and said, all this is out of order, but he didn't do that. Neither did he go public. He just carried on privately in his house, doing what he'd always done, as he did aforetime. He wasn't diverted. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. You must understand that to an extent in the East, homes were not that private. I mean, when Jesus was preaching, everybody flocked into whichever home it was. You know, people did do that. But they invaded his privacy. They came and found him praying. They knew he would pray 3 times a day. and they made sure that they were present when he was doing it. Maybe they made an excuse, we don't know, we have no idea, to go there and say, you know, we have some business with you, and they caught him praying. No, well, they would be praying, but I don't like your message, they just did it. But then they soon disappeared. They came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. First of all, they say to the king, you have signed a decree, haven't you? You're aware of what you've done, aren't you? So that the king says, yes, the thing's true. I did sign it according to the law of the Medes and Persians with all three. Having got him there, then they tell him why. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah. Now, I told you about making much of things and making little of things, you see. That Daniel of the children of the captivity of Judah. He's only the president over them all. You see, you put people in a bad light if that's what your aim is. I wonder how many church meetings have done that down the years. You make a lot of something which there isn't a lot of, and you make little of that which is truly appropriately good or established. And here you have the senior officer and they're impeaching him. But they're not impeaching him. They know very well they can't impeach him. But they just... Now, this is interesting. The king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. In great contrast to Nebuchadnezzar, who was always violently angry when he heard of somebody not doing his will. But here, Darius was quite different. He realized he had been caught. And Daniel also had been caught. These words, the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. One can't imagine how, unless he tried to bribe them all. Don't know what. If we imagine that they went to Daniel at the first of the times of prayer, and therefore, you know, he had all day to try and seek to persuade them out of it, to find a ruse by which he could get out of it, but obviously it didn't work. So that he had no option but to bring Daniel and have him cast into the den of lions. Just like the Romans had their den, this may have been the den of lions that the Babylonians had had, and he hadn't brought his lions with him. Maybe he had, we don't know. But they did have their dens of lions in the ancient days. And he says, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Now, the king is not saying that he believes in this God. He never says that at any point in this chapter. But thy God whom thou servest continually. But what he's saying is, I approve of what you've done. Because you see, he can see on the principle, if he serves his God faithfully, even in this situation, then here is a man who's likely to serve him faithfully. Put it another way, if elders and deacons that are subject, that are privy to confidential information, if they keep it to themselves, then everybody knows they can trust them another time. But if they gossip it around, everybody knows that next time they won't tell. Which I know churches where that happens, they don't hear the things that you need to hear to be able to exercise spiritual help because they know it'll be all over the place. But it's the same principle. Do you see how it works? The king could see that if Daniel was like this before his God, then he would get the same sort of service himself, as faithful, as loyal, as continual. Well, the king was very distressed, as you know. He didn't go to sleep that night, and as soon as it began to be light, early in the morning, he went down. He couldn't move the seal or the stone, of course, so he cried with a lamentable voice, that is to say, he was greatly moved, and he didn't know what he was going to find, whether there would be an answer. He really didn't know at all. And he says, O Daniel, servant of the living God. Prepare to say that. is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? And if there had been a roar from the lions or silence from down the pit, he would know that that was not the case. But the answer came back, O King, live forever. My God has sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me. In secular literature, there is the tale that the presidents and the captains and princes answered that the reason that Daniel had been spared is because they'd been fed too much. And the joke, of course, was on them, because that was not the case when they were cast. But it forms no part of the scriptural literature. My God has sent his angels and has shut the lion's mouth. It was nice to read Psalm 91, and it was this bit that I particularly had in mind. The angels watch them on their way and aid with friendly arm. But he sends his angels to watch over his people. They watch over those who shall be heirs of salvation. As before, my God, innocency was found in me, not perfection. And also before thee, O King, have I done no hurt. So the king insisted that Daniel be taken up. It looks as if they lifted him up and hauled him out, and commanded that the people who had accused of them, about a dozen of them, with their wives and their children should be cast into the den. And we read that the lions had the mastery of them before they even got to the bottom. And then Darius writes this note. The king Darius wrote unto all the people, nations and languages that dwell in the earth, I make a decree. You see what he's done there. He's broken the rule of the Medes and Persians, because this is only day two. As far as we can tell, well, it certainly isn't day 30. And he has issued a decree to override the law of the Medes and Persians. Now, I suppose if that could be done then, it could have been done before. His way round it would have been to have made another decree, but perhaps he couldn't get away with that. But now, because he had established his authority over the men who'd been in caused this trouble, and he'd seen the action of God, Darius was prepared to override it. He makes this decree, it's another decree, don't actually cancel the other one, but it clearly overrides it because it takes immediate effect. Then King Darius, and you can see the wisdom of that, then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations and languages that dwell in the earth, I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. Not saying he's my God. He doesn't say like Nebuchadnezzar that he's come into any sort of personal relationship. But throughout the whole length and breadth of the land, people must be free to worship. The Jews must be free to worship. And any proselytes that there may be, they must be free. They're not to be attacked. From now on, day two, day three. That in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and steadfast for ever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. I have a feeling that he knew of Nebuchadnezzar's earlier decrees. And having seen the evidence himself of what went on in the Den of Lions, he was prepared now to take that on board. Unless he's speaking entirely impressed by the Spirit. He is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. I should add, of course, that the 70 years of captivity are about to be over early in the reign of Cyrus. If Daniel was 10 when he came, he would now be 80. If he was 15, he would now be 85. But we're thinking in ages like that, you know. An 85-year-old man cast into the den of lions, able to talk to the king like that. But you can understand that here is a man who's seen it all, done it all, and really was held in awe by him, but was the subject of jealousy of the people. And possibly therein lies the clue as to why democracy is the miry clay in this whole story. Because it is always subject to the jealousies and the perceptions of thousands of different people who all come from a different perspective. Well, there we are, we leave it there and pray that the Lord will give us food for thought, helping our life from there.